issues with the budget, any other sections of the budget. I have one item that I'd like to bring up kind of for discussion. It's not in the budget, and I don't know if the group has the will to put it in the budget, but I am concerned about it, and that is the lack of having a lobbyist at the state level. And the reason is that the state budget is going to continue to get tighter. We no longer will have a local representative with 14 years experience. We'll have most likely a newbie from Ketchikan. And our senator is no longer co-chair of finance committee. So I think we're looking in the foreseeable future most likely at, you know, quite substantially reduced capital budgets. And I think it could be an investment of, you know, 20 or 30 grand a year to hopefully get much larger return back in, you know, additional funding from the state. So I know it's going to be, everyone's going to be fighting for money up at the state, you know. And if we don't have someone, and I know staff is, I mean, they're pretty maxed out. I don't see them, that they're able to be on the phone constantly with legislators. I know there's some staff that could do it, but it's a question of their time. So anyway, I wanted to bring it up for discussion. I think that a basic contract with the lobbyists would be in that range. I know everyone hates or loves to hate lobbyists, but they do serve a purpose and sometimes bring money back to communities. I mean, if they don't, you don't rehire them, right? So that's my... I would do that if I could make a motion. I don't know if it would be seconded. But I imagine that it would mean another reduction in our pie of somewhere else, probably capital money, capital projects, right?
Or other places.
Yeah, I'd like to speak on that same item she does, and I've felt this for a long time. With our current political change, we have lost our representatives and we have lost our voice. And I'm in agreement with Julie that we do need to do something in the future, because from this point on, for the foreseeable future, it's going to be very difficult for us to get funding and capital projects and some of the money that's necessary for that helps our community with all the things that we do. And right now we're kind of getting out of the picture. And if our community is going to need anything, it's going to need assistance in trying to secure capital funds and other funds to help run our community. And I'm in agreement with Julie that is a good investment. We've had lobbyists before, and the ones that we have hired is in the same range as she's talking about, $38,000 a year. I don't know how important it is to this board, but to me it's important, because there's a lot of things that we benefit from it. So that's just my position, and I'd like to thank Julie.
We could ask the city manager to take a look at that and see if there's some place where we can pull the money from to do it, because I'm in agreement with both of you, not just for capital projects, but also when they start talking about salmon sustainability and other items that affect all the commercial fishermen here and the port services and that kind of stuff. We need a voice up there.
Presenters, and I mean,
I would like to see our city manager review it, come back with a recommendation if he can.
And one thing about it, if you do, say you do approve this budget, we can bring something back to you to amend it. So it's, we can figure out something.
Okay.
And how much are we talking about?
I I guess around 30 grand?
I would say that normally it's, we had, I can't think of his name offhand, but we paid him about 38, so it was right close to 40. So if you're in that ballpark, I'm not sure, but that's kind of where we were before.
I can tell you the, our Washington DC lobbyist is 32,000 a year. And I can tell you that we work closely with them and all kind of little things they're looking out for. We can call them and say, hey, we're looking at doing this and that. Is there, can you steer us towards some grant money? What agencies have that kind of money for this kind of thing? They'll do that. They do all kind of stuff. And they keep us updated on things going on in Washington. So they are extremely valuable in steering us the right way and making suggestions. We're in tune, Marla, and we've hooked her up with our lobbyists for hospital issues and funding and stuff. So they've been helping us with that, and so they can be extremely valuable if you have, you know, if you have a really good one, they can be worth their weight in gold. So. So
we have a consensus to.
Well, and how much?
100.
Well, part one of Washington is 32. Yeah, let's go 32 to 35 or something like that, or 32 to 38.
Would this person be somebody that's local that we have to pay travel back and forth to Juneau all the time, or would it be somebody that's in Juneau that would work?
I think
for
once
us?
You get out there, you can advertise for them and start finding in the field, because there's quite a few.
There's usually professional ones that do different things like that. You would do an advertisement and have a solicitation and go that route.
Yeah, generally lobbyists in Juneau have several contracts and they're there for session. Whether they live in Juneau or somewhere else, they're there for session.
Okay.
32, 38, the field.
Sure.
So I will bring something back to you sometime here in the near future. Is that good enough?
Yep.
That's good enough. Okay. So we do have a motion on the floor and a second to adopt the current budget as amended. Item 13D. Do we have
still a comment?
Sure. Please. I'll be relaxed.
KJ, we're school level drive library director. I just kind of want to bring the council up to speed on our summer reading program. We opened it up to high school students this year, so currently we have 200 students enrolled in the summer reading program. I'm not exactly sure how many of those will actually complete the program and what at a point level that we consider. But there is that interest, and not many students have chosen to sign up. And also I want to commend the community on the contributions they make for the prizes. Currently we have 145 prizes, and we probably have another $1,500 in prizes to hand out to ensure that all students that win finish the program with an item. And I do know, talking to the state grants administrator last week, they were doing a federal report on local contributions to programs. And they said they went along, and you know, everybody's was kind of right in here, and Wrangell's just skyrocketed. And they were quite impressed with that. And in fact, we're going to be receiving $500 from the Alaska Library Association instead of me getting paid an honorarium for teaching classes with the state library. They're going to put it into the summer reading program, which will give us a little bit more funds for that. But I also wanted to commend the Parks and Rec Department. Every Tuesday morning, they have scheduled with us. We open the library just for those 22 to 25 students. They come in, they read, they take their tests, so it alleviates some of the flow that we have in the afternoons, where we have anywhere from 20 to 30 people right over in the children's area taking tests on the computers, you know, that we borrow from the school, that sort of thing. And anyway, we just want to thank the community and everybody for their support on that. So. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a lot of kids.
Cool.
I mean, proportion to the kids in the community, and You guys have really built a really good program.
Thank you for your donation.
And the community, as always, comes through and really supports the kids here, so that's really nice.
Okay, did you have anything else?
I just want to thank Kate. She runs a good program.
Any other budget items? Okay, poll vote please.
Assembly members Stowe?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspin?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Decker?
Yes.
Okay, we're on to agenda item 13E. Proposed ordinance number 881, an ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending chapter 3.04 to title 3 of the Wrangell Municipal Code, administration and personnel relating to the general provisions for the Assembly. And this is a first reading.
I move to approve the first reading and move to a second with public hearing to be held June 24th, 2014.
Second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion or questions?
Page 4. I guess I'm asking the city clerk on E, the bold print. We still have Wrangell Lumber Company listed?
No. Okay, so what is bolded and bracketed will be removed.
Okay.
And what is underlined will be added.
Okay.
Good question.
Funny that we still have Wrangell Lumber Company in there right now, though.
We got what?
A couple years ago.
Yeah. Other questions?
That's the only thing I...
Comments? I have a question, just for clarification for me. Page 2, so it'd be 3.04.05, and in section B, C, it says if both the mayor and the vice mayor are not present, assembly members shall be selected by those members present to preside at the meeting. When a member is acting as chair, the member retains all privileges otherwise held as a member of the assembly. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious how that relates to, like, for example, me as vice mayor, mm-hmm. presiding as chair, do I retain all privileges otherwise held by a member of the assembly? For instance, can I make a motion or something?
No.
Okay. I wanted to clarify that.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I already called you.
Okay, poll vote, please.
Assembly members McCloskey?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspin?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Becker?
Yes. Okay, on to agenda item 13F. A proposed ordinance number 882, an ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, adopting a new chapter 3.05 to Title 3 of the Wrangell Municipal Code, administration and personnel relating to rules of procedure for the Assembly. This is the first reading.
Move to approve first reading and move to a second with the public hearing to be held June 24th, 2014.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. And are there any questions or comments, discussion?
The only comment I would have is under public procedure 305.040, public participation.
Okay.
Item 5 in the bottom. The mayor may prescribe limits to request designated speakers for groups and that. The part of that whole section, what I was trying to get at was the fact that that there should be someone there where that they state at the beginning of the meeting. It's normally done at the beginning of the meeting. If there's a whole group of people out here, they establish it right away. Otherwise, we're reverting back to the public participation of speaking for 5 minutes. and the public has that right to designate each person to give up their 5 minutes to somebody or something like that. That's been the normal procedure. I just, did I miss it in there somewhere that's set at the beginning of the meeting?
No, I think it's just understood.
Yeah, I think we should have it in writing.
So how would you propose adding that? At the beginning of the meeting, the mayor may prescribe time, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see that change. So that way we, you know, it's here and it's established that's when you do it.
Or how about this, James? Prior to persons to be heard, the mayor may prescribe.
The only time that it ever become a problem is when this place fills up full of people, and what you're trying to do is keep it limited, and then, like they say, in the groups, keep the groups, get more people to speak for it and stuff. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to do it, get partway through it, and then all of a sudden establish and say we got too many people talking, we need to establish time limits.
Right,
but that's unfair to everybody then. So I just would like to see something in here that says we have a meeting, beginning meeting, that we establish the rules right away, and that way everybody understands them.
I've seen Mayor Jack do that at the beginning, not for that purpose, but to explain things at the beginning of the meeting. I don't have a problem if the assembly agrees that it could be at the beginning of the meeting.
I guess that would be on
with it.
Persons to be heard or something like Julie's suggestion.
I was just thinking, because at the beginning of the meeting, there's a few things, and then we get to persons to be heard. So instead of saying at the beginning, just saying prior to persons to be heard, so prior, before you get to opening that part up.
When you open it up, you can you can make a judgment. Then the mayor can make a judgment. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that.
How about the mayor may, prior to the call of the out persons to be heard, prescribe time limits?
Yeah. That covers it because it says may.
Okay.
Doesn't have to happen all the time, but it gives them the opportunity to clarify it in the beginning.
Any questions with that?
Nope.
Okay. Any other questions, concerns? I have one item under the teleconferencing section, 3.05.05, page 7. Basically, I don't have a problem with limiting participation by assembly members through teleconferencing, to a certain number of meetings, and not becoming a regular behavior, but in C it says members participating in the meeting by teleconference may not vote. I just don't see really the reason for the participation by teleconference if you can't be a full part of the meeting.
In Julie, mm-hmm. In the discussions when we were forming this in the committee, yeah. The main reason for that is the fact that we didn't want to get into a discussion of people calling in and using that as a voting system. The roll call members is you're there, you're participating, the people vote you in, they want you there to represent them. And if you're gone and teleconferencing, you have the right to come in and comment and do the rest of it, but you're absent at that point.
Well, and there's a limitation on this, if I read this right, because you are considered unexcused absence, and therefore you can only have 50% unexcused absences before you're kicked off the assembly within a four-month period. So that automatically limits how much you can do that, right? And so I just, for myself, speaking for myself, I have a job that does require me to travel, especially during legislative session. And, I can be available to call in because usually my meetings are during the day. And I that issue of, you know, people voted you in to represent them, I agree with that, and I think showing up to the meeting by teleconference is doing that. I would show up in person if I was in town, but I can't, you know, resign from my job to do that.
Could there ever be a legal issue when it comes to a vote of positively identifying the person on that phone? We hear a voice, it may sound like my voice calling in, but how do we know for certain that that's me on the other end of that line?
Mayor, that discussion was held quite lengthy at the hospital board meetings, and that gets into what he was talking about, and then you'd have to have confirmation of all those different things, and that becomes a real problem for...
They have a security question when they log in, like you do for every internet site you have, or you can do it by Skype where you can visually see the person. I think it's 2014. I personally feel like we should have the option to do that and still have full rights of as an assignment member. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, my opinion is, and the group that we had wanted the members to be present. And that's my feeling too.
I'd have to agree. I mean, my job has a real problem with me being here all the time too. And if I'm not here, I don't even have the opportunity to call in to even participate in the vote. So I am absent. So I guess I have to agree. If you're not here, you don't vote.
It was a tough question. It was a tough one to tackle too.
Okay, any other questions or issues with the motion?
Call for question.
Roll call vote, please.
Assemblymembers Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspoon?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Decker?
Yes. Okay, we are on to agenda item 13G, correct? Mm-hmm. A proposed ordinance number 882, an ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending sections 15.12.200, 15.12.210, 15.12.215, 15.12.222, 15.12.223 and 15.12.240 of Chapter 15.12, Electricity of the Wrangell Municipal Code to change the electrical rates and establish an effective date. This is the first reading.
Move to approve first reading and move to a second with a public hearing to be held on June
24,
2014.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
This was, I know, in the part of our budget, and I didn't bring it up until it actually came into this, but the 5% increase and then another possible 5% increase January 1st, I think would be awfully hard on some people. I think if we are trying to even out the budget a little bit and do it right now at a 7% increase, and if we need it only a 3% increase 1st of January, because that's when the electricity rates go up. I mean, right now we're not that high, and that'll give everybody the general feeling that, oh my, we may end up having to go 3% more, but that's just my thought on it. I mean, they want to go 5%, they want to do a 10% if the CEQA doesn't get the rebate. You know, if we don't need to go 3% more, the 7% will still be helping us build up our budget revenues, our reserves. And that's just my thought on this. I mean, 5 and 5, I don't want to see 5% increase till January 1st. I mean, it's. I think some people it's going to be very, very hard on. I really do.
So, can I clarify? So, Are you saying 7% now and 3% in January?
If we need it, if we don't need it, if the CPA rebate comes, then we don't have to go.
Then we just let the 7%
stand. But it'd be 7%, we're just at 7%, they don't have to go to 10.
But why not 5% now, and if the rebate comes, then we don't do the extra 5?
But if it doesn't come down, then you go 5% in January. Then you got that big 5%.
Well, I mean, either way, we're still 10% more than where we are today.
True, but 7% now is going to ease everybody into the simple fact that we may end up having to go up again. Right now, 7% is in the summertime. It isn't going to be, it may not be a big difference, but I think a 5% in July or January, it may hit some people very hard. It may not, it may. It just, there's some people that another 5% increase in their electricity bill is going to be a lot in January, because that's when it's going to go up, and that's when the electricity bills go up. If we go at 7% now, ease them into it, we don't need to go 3% more, fine, we'll be great. Jeff's got his hand up.
I don't have any objection either way. One thing, is, like we mentioned earlier, is that the reserves in the electric fund are insufficient. And we're, I mean, if we do any work there at all, we go backwards. If we don't do any capital improvements or anything like that to keep the system up, you know, maybe we gain a tiny bit. So, you know, I wouldn't object to the 7%. And, you know, we might, if we do that, I'm not sure even in January, I think we, even if we don't get the SEPA rebate, you know, it may be better just to wait until next July 1 if we went 7%. But I think if you go 5%, then you really need to look at something in January. But I think if we went 7, we could probably, even though it's probably not the best thing, but we certainly, I think, could get through till July 1 and of the following year to relook at it. So if that's an option that the Assembly would like to look at, I certainly would have no objections to that.
Is that something we can make a decision on to go 7 now and 3 next fiscal year? Can we decide that now, or would that would just come back up?
I would just say, if that's what you're looking at, I would say a 7 now, we'll do the budget next year and make a decision at that time what July 1 needs to be. If it needs to be, we get the rebate and everything looks great, maybe we don't have to do anything. If we don't, we might have to go another 5%, who knows. But I think that's a decision we can make during the budget process next year. And that would alleviate doing 2 rate increases in the same year. And if we do get it, it would put us a little bit into the positive direction as far as revenues, where we can start gaining a little ground with our reserves. I know Clay has talked about a generator at one time, kind of for backup purposes, and I mean, one of those, you'd be out of money instantly. In fact, you might have to borrow money to do it, so.
I like Jeff's idea.
So do I.
So I'll make a motion to change the
rate. There doesn't need to be a motion, because this is just the first reading. So we can make changes to this proposed ordinance and then bring it back for the second reading with a public hearing.
Okay.
As
good.
Okay.
Everyone in agreement with that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it back
yes.
7% and just one time rate increase.
Yep.
Okay. Any other discussion? Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspin?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Decker?
Yes. Okay, we're on to agenda item 13H. This is a discussion and possible action regarding roosters in single and multifamily zone properties, and I had requested this be added to the agenda. The reason I requested it was we had some public testimony at our last meeting, and I've been hearing about the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings and you know, some other discussions around town regarding chickens, roosters, dogs. And I don't have necessarily a proposed solution. So I wanted to kind of open it for discussion. My hope is that I think there are more and more people in town getting chickens. I think it's because they're concerned about where the food comes from, and they, you know, want healthy source of food. And I think all those things are positive, and I'd like to encourage that in a way that doesn't, you know, add additional conflict between neighbors. So I think, you know, if we just think through the issues, I think we can come up with some reasonable, you know, fairly reasonable, fairly unobtrusive, you know, ways to do that. And then we can all get along, hopefully. So I my recommendation would be to specifically ask the Planning and Zoning Commission to look at something with that kind of a direction.
What direction as to?
To basically facilitate chicken ownership, but reduce neighbor conflicts.
Isn't this something that code review committee is already looking at? No.
No.
Because you guys are just looking at fine-tuning some issues that are already in the code.
Well, there is the Wrangell Municipal Code. You know, it's right in here. She's got it in here with this. You know, the keeping of an animal that causes a disturbance by noise after being informed that this noise is having that effect, and if the noise continues, it's right in, you know, it's right there. I mean, that's the code, and that's how it's written.
That's the nuisance part.
Well, it also says noise. You know, if it's a noise, I mean, it's already in here, as it says how we're supposed to do it. Then it goes down here, remedies and the notifications of the offenders by the police chief. I mean, that's in our code already. How do we take care of it? So I'm kind of having a tough time figuring out what more you would add to it.
Well, I mean, there's some other information packet as well from other communities. That's specifically, I think, addressing a rooster, a dog barking, you know, noise nuisances. The animal section, as far as, you know, because I think you have multiple things going on. You have chickens, you have, you know, containing chickens, you have dogs, you have roosters. And so there's multiple issues going on. But I do feel like the potential for a conflict to continue to increase is there, and it needs to be looked at closer. And I think there's some reasonable things that potentially could be solutions.
There could be. You know, but there's always somebody that's not going to be happy with something.
Well, I know.
You know,
that.
And that's, you got the simple thing of dog barking. You have somebody running a chainsaw at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, because it's daylight. You know, there's just, I don't see any more. I mean, I can see where you must have done this where the other communities. I mean, they have Fairbanks, Wasilla, and Anchorage, and those are huge communities compared to us. I mean, it'd probably been better to go through Petersburg or see what they have for their ordinances and their codes. I don't know if sending it to another committee would be a whole lot of help for changing the code, but I don't know. I think that there's always going to be some conflict, and the last conflict was taken care of.
That was my, excuse me, I'm breaking up.
That's all right.
That was my question, was did we not cure the problem by not allowing the roosters at all?
Well, the last conflict was taken care of. I mean, the nuisance was taken care of.
No, the conflict was taken care of.
Yeah, the nuisance was taken care of.
But the only thing that I could see in here is keep the conflict down is almost all these recommend no roosters be allowed. It's a personal choice. I look at it from the other side point when, you know, from 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock in the morning, 10 at night, you make noise. But I also don't like them neighbor's dog barking in the middle of the night all night long either,
yeah.
So.
Really?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Please.
I'm guilty, I have chickens.
But guilty.
No roosters.
Turing and 7.5 miles, Amobia, planning and zoning chairman. We are addressing some of this. We're, at the last meeting that we had, there was quite a bit of chicken discussion. And we had decided at that time to review some of the animal ordinances and zoning that we have. So this is already on our radar. That doesn't mean that we're gonna jump right in it and the next meeting we're gonna either say yay or nay on roosters. It just says that we're looking at this because we know there is an issue. Is it something we wanna put as a zoning or is it something we wanna leave as animal ordinance? Because you can't start, in my mind, and this is just my point of view, you can't always just start nitpicking every single animal as where you're gonna have it. People do have to have a bit of flexibility. So it's a matter of, are we gonna put it under the zoning and say no roosters in the single family or multi-family, or are we gonna say we're gonna go with the animal ordinances with noise complaints? Because there are areas in single and multi, probably single more, that there is adequate space and adequate distance that a person could have a rooster without that being an issue. Then if a person, say, has that space and then they want to have a rooster, then they have to what, come and get a conditional use permit, and they have to do a bunch of other stuff. So, you know, it may be that what we have is fine, maybe because this was a big blow up that all of a sudden it's now on everybody's radar, but maybe as things calm down, we can look at it a little bit differently and maybe the animal ordinances are sufficient. But it is on planning and zoning's plate already. It's an open discussion that we have.
I think that there's some fairly unrestrictive, getting a conditional use permit I don't think is too restrictive, potential solution that basically would allow roosters in even single multifamily residential areas if that structure, that site works out, if the neighbors are okay with it, you know.
So, and that's what we're going to look at. I mean, so as I say, it's already on our agenda. Maybe on this agenda, we're gathering information. We're going to look at what other communities are doing. At our last meeting, we decided that this was something we were going to look into further. So you guys can go ahead and direct us, but we're already going there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I personally would not want to see an outright ban on roosters. Because it's like she said, there are some neighborhoods where having a rooster is just fine. And there are other neighborhoods where people just don't want them in there, period. If there's something that we can do as far as the way this is written, dealing with the noise or complaints from neighbors, I think that would be better than just an overall ban.
Why don't we just let planning and zoning mm-hmm. bring back something to us?
I agree.
Okay, you got it, Terry. The ball's in your court.
Yep, take it on. Might be a little worse.
Okay. Thank you, Terry.
Next agenda item is 13I. Okay, let me get there. It's approval of an agreement between Department of Transportation and the City and Borough of Wrangell to take over operations of the Myers Chuck float.
Move to approve an agreement with the State of Alaska Department of Transportation and Facilities for the transfer of Myers Chuck float system in the amount of $1,400,000, with the money to be used as follows: $700,000 to be used to match state funds and rebuild Myers Chuck float when a fee-based mortgage system is agreed to by Myers Chuck residents. The remaining $700,000 will be used on the Wrangell float system.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Discussion.
We talked to Brandon already. And my other question I forgot to ask him. Is this a set in stone date that we have to say we're going to take this to get this $1 million? Or, I mean, is it just?
I think what will happen is if the assembly approves this, we would sign the agreement that DOT has given us, and then at that point they would send us a check for $1.4 million. And then what would happen is that we would put a portion of that, half of that, into some kind of an interest-bearing account, and it would be dedicated for the Myers-Chuck float system. And we can use this money to match the state harbor's money, I think it's on a 50-50 thing, that at some point in the future to rebuild the Myers-Chuck float. But we're only willing to do that, and the Port Commission, I think, feels strong about this, administration does, and the Harbor Department does, that is only going to work if they're willing to pay
a mortgage.
Yeah, pay some fee down there, and then we would have someone down there that would be, maybe you would give them free stall rent or mortgage rent to collect the data, give it to us. We can do the billing and all that, but somehow they would have to be our eyes on the project down there. If we don't do that, if we just accept it, rebuild it, and there isn't any of that, and then as there's maintenance done, it's going to be a rub on our harbor paying people, that they're paying, and they're part of what they're paying for is to maintain a float system that no one down there is paying. So the only way we're willing to do that, and we've told them this, there has to be some agreement on a mortgage based system where they have to pay. And I think we do agree they probably don't need to pay as much as we do, because we don't supply water, we don't supply electricity, we have sewer dump stations, so there isn't going to be a lot of those services, but they need to pay something, and to help at least show that they're trying to pay their own way. And also, there's a fair amount of yacht traffic and stuff that goes through there and other people, and it would be the responsibility of whoever we have down there to collect that money too. And so, and then with the remaining money, we can use that to match state money also. So the other $700,000, of course, we're trying to get money to rebuild Shoemaker Bay. And so anyway, that would, you know, it's just one step closer to getting Shoemaker Bay fixed.
What's the feel that you've gotten from the residents down there, whether or not they would agree to pay for a fee-based system?
Rather than answer that, Greg Meisner, he's here, and he's been down there multiple times, and he may have a better feel for that. I've never actually been down there, but Carol Rushmore's been down, the engineer from the state's been down, Brendan's been down, Greg's been down multiple times, so he might have a better feel for that.
Greg Meisner, 212 Second Avenue. The majority of the folks there are fine with it. They understand our predicament, that it would make zero sense for us. We've been crystal clear about that. It'd be zero sense for us to get involved if we can't create some funds with it. And Jeff hit around the head. We told them we wouldn't even play along if they're not going to step up and pay a portion into the Wrangell Harbor system to maintain and eventually replace that thing. Because even if we put a brand new in today, 40, 45 years, you got to turn around. And this would be twice what you pay today for it. So somehow you got to produce some money in the reserve system to, you know, in a decade, the honeymoon will be over. That thing's going to look a lot of brand new, and they'll be doing some maintenance. And then about 25 or 30 years in, your depreciation rate really falls off the end. You start doing repairs and flotation, and it just gets expensive. So they understand it. The majority of them, there's only about six people that live there year round. And then the rest migrate in the summer and then leave. So we've been accepting some emails and comments, but I think everyone we've gotten realized we need to pay something. There was one letter, I don't recall what it was from, that pretty much said, we pay our taxes, we want free mortgage. Well, that's not going to happen. None of that tax money goes into the harbor system, of course, it goes into the schools, so that's a whole different tax. But there's one person who wanted to wait. If we chose to wait 4 or 5 years to replace it, because you could, the dock down there is probably, it's better shape, I think, than Inner Harbor facility is. If you've been on Inner Harbor facility, you can see the amount of rot that's in the bull rails and some of the timbers. The material down there had more creosote into it. It was similar to what used to be a fishing game dock, and it's not as rotten. So it's there's no electricity to be out of code. There's none of that on there. So the system can sit there for 5 years easy enough with a simple bath every year. And there was one gentleman that wanted to wait 5 years to pay anything if we chose to wait 5 years to put a new one in. And my comment was, we're already 40 years behind starting to collect any money for it, so giving you five more years off didn't make any sense either. So, but other than that, they get it.
So it, there you have a, I mean, I'd give it down there enough time. There's six people live down there,
yes,
approximately. So do you have somebody in mind that would be responsible enough to collect fees?
Well, those decisions can be made anytime.
Right.
There was one lady who stepped up to voice her willingness, and that was the gal who does is the mailman, if you will, down there. I can't think of her name off the top of my head. And they're at the dock every day anyways. And I was talking to somebody who was down here last week who also voiced opinion, maybe that person isn't the best one because of political differences down there. And I said, well, that's all. We can deal with that later. But, you know, you could do a collection box there, and you could have somebody walk the dock every day. And it wouldn't be that hard to do. I mean, the dock's 350 feet long. Walk the thing every evening. In other words, they could pay a fee in the box and it was collected. It would be sent back to us. So I think that would be easily worked out.
Okay.
What, how we compensate them, we could figure out later, whether it's free mortgage or it's a little stipend. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out when the time comes. But financially, we could turn this, as Jeff, you know, presented, we could turn this into $2.8 million to do some good work with, I think. So, and we did draw them into our borough, so the question becomes, should we step up and assist them in getting this done? So, our commission believes so.
You're fine with it either way?
Obviously, if you have to go 55 miles south to work on something, it'd be easier, but, you know,
yeah,
it is what it is. You're not doing it every day. So.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Okay. Full vote, please.
Assemblymember Stowe?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspoon?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Decker?
Yes. Okay, on to agenda item 13J, approval of change order number 1 and 2 for the Cassiar Street Roadway and Utilities Improvement Project.
Move to approve change order number 1 in the amount of $102,470 and to approve the change order number 2 in the amount of $187,430 for a total of $289,900 with the funding to come from the grants for the Cassiar Street project.
Second.
The motion has been made and seconded. Discussion. You want to give us a little?
Sure. Initially, when the bids went out on the Cassiar project, we, in our wildest dreams, did not think we were going to have enough money to do concrete. And we thought the bids would come in somewhere between $1 million and $1.2 million. And even that, we've got roughly $1.4 million or $1.5 million to spend from with grant monies, and that includes the contractor, the inspection, the engineering, all those kind of things. So when the actual bid from Rock and Road came in at $790,000, and we couldn't even talk to them until they'd signed an agreement about any potential change orders, but concrete is a better product, it lasts longer, it is more expensive. And so we entertained the idea of at least getting prices from them to see if with the prices that we can fit it into the money that we had, and it appears that we can do that. It does still leave a contingency for of roughly maybe $50,000 to $100,000 for things that, you know, if we have other change orders that come during the project, we do have you know, some money to deal with that, so it's not like right at the exact number. So we feel comfortable we can do this. One of the problems too is when we did concrete is that you have to leave the road open for a longer period of time before you can drive on it because of the concrete curing process. And with asphalt, you can just say nobody's on it. By that evening, everybody can drive on it. So, you know, it's not a big deal. But concrete, you can't do that. So one of the issues, as you drive up the road, and I can't remember the exact point, but you get up there before you kind of go up over the hill where Ken Davidson's house is, down the road a little bit. It's reasonably wide enough, like 18 feet wide till you get to there, but then the road narrows going up around that corner to 14 feet. So if you're going to do half of the road and you've got, with concrete, when you do two of them, you've got dowels sticking out, rebar sticking out, that when you pour the other half, it ties them together. So if you've got 7 feet here, 7 feet here, and on this seven you got things sticking out, you don't have enough driving surface to get people by for those, that period of time that the concrete's curing. So the only thing that made sense is we're going to have to widen the road there, and we have the right of way to do it. We don't have to buy right away, but we got to do, so there's some drilling and shooting and some other things that get pretty spendy to do. And so they've given us a price of that, and that between the two things, going to concrete and then the additional inspection and testing required of concrete, and then doing the widening of the road. And long term, it will make it a better situation. The road will be, you know, will be wider the whole way up there. And we might even be able to do, you know, some of the bypass. If I think we're going to talk to one of the residents up there about using their driveway and kind of going to go up over the hill through the lot we have and come back down into the turnaround area up there. So, but I think we still need to do the whole thing here to make this work. So, and I believe that we have the money to do it. I think it will make it a much better product in the end. It will allow during the construction process enough room to kind of squeeze by there if we widen the road. And so anyway, that's, at this point, that's our recommendation.
Any questions or comments?
Okay.
Well, please.
Assembly members McCloskey?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Becker?
Yes. Okay, we are down to agenda, or the attorney's file. That information's in the packet. And agenda item 15 is an executive session. We have two items to discuss in executive session. Would the assembly like to make two motions at this time, then recess and go into executive session so we don't have to come back and forth to the two items? Does that make sense? Is that clear? So make a motion, vote on it, make a second motion, vote on it, then recess and go into executive session. Then we can come out and take any action on either item, either of the two items. So we don't have to go back and forth into the chambers.
Can we can do that? Tell me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll make a motion pursuant to 44.62.320(c)(2) that we recess into executive session to discuss matters that may tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, specifically the borough clerk's evaluation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Call vote, please.
Assembly members McCloskey?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspin?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Becker?
Yes. Okay, next executive session. 15B, discussion of union grievance arbitration proceeding. I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, move to go into executive session to discuss the union grievance arbitration proceeding, which the immediate knowledge of would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the borough.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, we'll vote please.
Assembly members Blake?
Yes.
Wiederspoon?
Yes.
Stowe?
Yes.
McCloskey?
Yes.
And Vice Mayor Decker?
Yes. Okay, we are recessing.